Okay, let me introduce myself. I'm Andrew Newman. I'm Professor of Islamic Studies in Persian at the University of Edinburgh and Chair of the British Institute of Persian Studies Outreach Committee. And let me welcome everyone to our May webinar series in our webinar series for 2022. We're delighted to welcome Majid Donishgar, who's going to talk to us in a couple of minutes. Let me introduce our speaker for today. Majid Donishgar is lecturer and researcher of Islamic Central and Southeast Asian Studies at the Oriental Studies Department of the University of Freiburg. He's an alumnus of the Freiburg Institute for Advanced Studies and was also the Marie Curie Fellow of the European Union and the George Gray Scholar of the Auckland Libraries. Majid has taught courses in Islamic Studies, Islam in Southeast Asia, Religion and Science at the University of Freiburg and the University of Otago and Otago Medical School in New Zealand, as well as the University of Malaya in Malaysia. His publications include two monographs, Studying the Quran in the Muslim Academy from OUP 2020, and Tatawi Jauhari and the Quran from Routledge in 2018, and also three edited volumes, Deconstructing Islamic Studies from ILEX and Harvard University Center for Hellenic Studies 2020, Islamic Studies Today, Essays in Honor of Andrew Rippon, Brill 2017, and the Quran in the Malay-Indonesian World, Routledge 2016. He has published a number of articles on Persian Malay, including a very old Malay Islamic manuscript from Indonesia and the Malay World 2022, Shaving the Prophet, Dar Islam 2021, Indonesian manuscripts in Iran in Indonesia and the Malaysian World 2021, and an old Persian Malay anthology of poems, Dabir Journal 2020. He has also received the George Gray's Award of the Auckland Libraries, through which he compiled an edited catalog of Islamic and Middle Eastern manuscripts throughout New Zealand. So Majid, without further ado, please carry on.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Hello, Andrew, Sylvia, and thank you, British Institute of Persian Studies, for inviting me and for your kind introduction. So as you know, I want to talk about the Persian and aspects of the Malay-Indonesian world. So let's talk about the concept and geography of Persian world. So we have a classical definition, which if you go through older manuscripts, early literature, you can see that they specifically mention the geography of the Muslim world based on their language. So for example, some legal works tell us about the popularity of Turkish, Persian, and Arabic language across the Muslim world. So therefore they had an idea that wherever people were speaking Persian, so they were were part of a territory of Persian speaking Muslims or even Turkish and Arabic saying. But this idea developed over the centuries. But the most popular thing is the Balkans to Bengal complex, which emerged out of the important works of Marshall Hodgson, later borrowed by Shahab Ahmed. But usually you know that people try to ascribe it to Shahab Ahmed, but earlier in 1970s, Marshall Hodgson talked about this issue. We have Persephone by the late Professor Bert Fregna, and his idea was about the Qalamroi Zabon Farsi, or transregional language and lingua franca. And after that, we have the Iranian world, which was, during the last decade, Hamid Dabashi talked about this issue, which was taken from the French arguments, former French source Le Monde Iranien, about the Iranian world, which was quite popular in the 1980s. So after that, you know, Hamid Dabashi also used this phrase. But we have recently, within the last few years, we have Balkans to Bengal complex plus Turkestan and Soviet Union. The eastern side of the Caspian Sea became a part of the Persian world. And we have two important works of Professor Green and Professor Amanat and Professor Ashraf. Both of, these two works are really good and important and tell us about the borders of the Persian world. So we know that from Balkan, let's say, from the northwest Turkey to South Asia, to Bengal, we have an idea that this part could be the Persian world or Persian zone. About the concept and geography of the Malay-Indonesian world. So Sayabija is a classical term you can find in Arabic and Persian materials and former classical hadiths or traditional sources produced by Arab or Persian thinkers. After that, we have Zirvad, the pre-post-Safavid period was quite popular, this term. during the Qajar period, Machin, we also use in Safavid era, but during Qajar period, Machin or Mahachin, which is a greater China, was another part of China, I mean, became very popular. After that, we have Tahtorih, in Arabic and Persian sources, you can find it too. We have Java, Siam, Malacca, or Malacca, pre-post Safavid and Qajari period. You can find a lot of these references too. Indian archipelago, we have including island of Java, Borneo, Malay Peninsula, and Siam, which is Thailand, actually. So we have Malay archipelago presented by, mainly by the famous British scientist, Alfred Wallace. We have Malay Peninsula again. We have Insulindia or Insulinde by two Dutch scholars in the 19th century. We have Dutch Indies as well as the British Malaya by Richard Winstead, which was quite important and for a long time. And it gives a sort of a colonial impression you will get after reading these sources, sort of materials, but they are quite important. And then we have the Malay word by Anthony Jones. We have also Malay Indonesian world by Peter Riddle and also Naqib al-Abbas. We have Indonesia, the Malay word, and but what are they? I mean, the countries, Burma, Myanmar, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, and are the main parts of the non-Islamic Buddhist land of the south of Southeast Asia. Well, my concentration is on Brunei, Indonesia, and Malaysia as Islamic regions of the Malay-Indonesian world. Okay, before going further, I wanna share with you about the status of Persian, scholarly works dealing with Persian and Malay Indonesian world and or Persian and Malay Indonesian literature and vice versa. I mean, Malay Indonesian, Persia or Persian its own. So former scholars like Van Ronkel, Gauzani, and you can see the list. So they work on different aspects of Persian in the Malay Indonesian world. Some of them work on inscriptions. Some of them work on the relationship between different communities. I mean, political approach. Some of them works on seals. Some of them works on dictionaries. And some of them works on cultural aspect, anthropological aspects, and so on and so forth. But as you can see, since 1888, we have the first, as far as we know, the first academic or scholarly work produced about contribution of Persian Shi contribution to Malay Indonesian world was published in 1888. So since then, we have more than 100 works dealing with different topics in which you can find reference to Persian contribution to the Malay Indonesian world. The other side, we have scholarly works on Malay began in the 19th century in Iran. So mainly during the Qajar period, the Nasserid period, Nasr al-Din Shah. So they started to translate whatever was in foreign languages. So they started to translate different works in different languages into Persian, some of which were about the Malay Indonesian world. So I have a forthcoming article about this issue. And we have local manuscripts. Many people were wondered whether we can find manuscripts in Iran from Malay Indonesian world. So a few years ago, I found a couple of manuscripts, which are all of them held in the Parliamentary Library of Iran, Katafani Majlis, and I published an article, as you can see, Indonesian manuscripts in Iran. And what you can see is a Javanese manuscript about Islamic theology, mainly that of Samarkandi. So this is what you have. So I want to tell you that since long time ago, people were talking about the relationship between these two communities and the borders and they wanted to specify the borders of these two regions. And what you can see that most scholarly work deal with, cultural aspects. And we have rarely scholars paid attention to manuscripts, original manuscripts. So I tried to fill this gap by examining a number of manuscripts, which most of them held in the Leiden University Library. Let's start with the first one. Code OR5658 of the Leiden University Library, origin is Banten. Date is, you can see the Banten here, yeah? The Banten is here from the late 17th century or early 18th century. It is about, it's a sort of a praises to the prophet and daily supplications. as a book of sema, which is listening to music and the singing of mystical poetry. A specific features of this manuscript is dedicated to Ali Ba'abad and Hadrat Aydarus, the communities coming from Yemen, and Persianate musical modes you can find, which is quite, unique. Persian poets, Persian Shi'i supplications with local hands, and a form of Malayalized Persian. So let's talk about the musical modes. So the first one, that is a bit slow. Okay. So we have Negame Ras. What you can see is a Negame Ras, which is quite popular. And we know that Negame Ras was used by in Arabic, Turkish, and Persian musical modes, but was more than on other societies, very popular among Iranian musicians. So Mansalla ala Tahab Tahami. So this is begins with this one. So the second one is Negame, what you can see, Sikah, but actually this is a Negame Sega. And what you can see is a transformation in the way Sega, now let me show you with this laser pointer, the way Sega Gaf is changed to this form of local Gaf with three dots below, which is quite unique. And then it was practiced by Malay Indonesian before the 18th century. Ma'ashar al-ushaq antum fuqara ma'alaykum ba'asab namul wasla wa yakfi ma'jara. So this is the Negame Sega. The other is Negame Chaharga, Sallu ala dayni al-ibadi, huwa khayru hadi. So what you can see is Negame Chaharga. Again, we have a different format of Chaharga. The cha is che, is changed to jin, and then the gaf comes with three dots below. Then we have the most popular types of Persian music. We have Negame Panjga, Sallu ala sayyid al-anam. What you can see, the Panjga, he, is changed to the Javi version, the Javi form of pe, which comes with fe with three dots above. And the guf again comes with kaf with three dots below. So probably one may wonder, so we can find other sorts of, Negame Rasega, Charga, and Panjga. Use such musical modes can be found in Turkish or other Arabic or Middle Eastern musical systems. But what we can see, there are further evidence in throughout this manuscript help us to conclude that there are some serious connection between these manuscripts and Persianate world. So we have Persian rhythmic poems, which are Shi'i Sufi, or I'll tell you now how. Sir Wali al Khuda Nur Nabi Murtaza Ma'dan Jud al Safa Shah Salamun Alay Haydar al Ashkar Shikan Babul Hassan al Hussein Sir Khuda Abul Hassan. So you can see the meaning. So we know that the Wali al Khuda is a good translation of Wali Allah, which is quite popular and described to Ali ibn Abi Talib. So and calling him as the light of Muhammad, also Murtaza, all of them are the attributions of Ali ibn Abi Talib, which is quite Shi'i, telling us about the formation of Shi'itized Sufism and its emergence in the Malay Indonesian world, and the Haydar al-Ashkar Shikan, all of them are attributions of Ali. Haydar means the lion, and Lashkar Shikan is a metaphorical term referring to the concept of, someone who's brave. And the father of Hassan and Hussein, the mystery of God, Sirr Khuda, which is quite popular in Shia literature when they want to refer to the Ahl al-Bayt and God, the relationship between these two, they call them Sirr Khuda. Or the other side, you can see Madh Torah Jibra'il go Rabb al-Dalil Qudwat Qadd Khalil Shah Salamun Alayk Ka'bay Ma Bu To Qibla Ma Ru Qudda Rao To Ma Hame Hindu To Shah Salamun Alayk. So what you can see is a sort of, Gabriel praise hand. So we have in Shi'i literature, mainly in Sufi literature, and through which they start to elevate Ali, and Gabriel start to talk about him. And then compare his leadership, level of leadership with that of Khalil, which is the attribution of Abraham or Prophet Ibrahim. As our Kaaba is you, and you can see the style of Gu, Kaaba Yama Gu To. In Gu, the type of Guf is changed to three with three dots below, which is quite local. And then the Bla Yamal row toe, and the format of he at the end of Qibla is quite Southeast Asian format. Probably you can find it in Indian ones, but I have mostly seen such forms of, calligraphy and script in Javanese and Malay Indonesian manuscripts. So all of us are your bondman or slave, and calling Ali as Shah is quite popular in Sufi literature. Okay. In this manuscript, you can also find poems of Persian saints of India. Usman Marwandi, who is very well known across the across South Asia, or in Sufi literature, he's known as La'l-Shahbaz Qalandar, is a very influential figure in Qalandari and Khaksari mystical path. And let me bring the next thing. So what you can see is a poem, right? So, but even native speakers probably cannot read it easily. He came from Iran, right? After that, he moved to India, lived there, and died over there. But the point is that how we can read it. So let's go for the first two. So you can see Rashida Man Badarayay, Kamaljas, Adami Kharas, Nah Keshi, Badaran Durya, Nahamala, Ahaihi, Ajabkara. So it is very big, right? It's very hard to understand it. So what he wants to say. So this is what I call it in my article as Malaya's Persian. They understood what they wrote, you know? But this is actually the main thing. Rashida Man Badarayay, Kamaljas, Adami Kharas, Nakashi, Andaran Daryaw. Namalohi ajab kauras. So this is exactly the way they started to produce something for local. They had their own understanding of Persian. They started to localize Persian. Therefore, I call it the Malayalized Persian. So you can see other forms, you know, mushtagan, tarsi, they change sin with sheen, which is changing sin with sheen coming, bring three dots above. It's very much taken from Sanskrit when they wanted to change Sanskrit terms to Persian. To Malay or Javi, they started to use this, which is quite interesting. You can find a couple of such things, Betarshidam or Betarsidam, Azudarya, and such things we have. Okay, what about the next? This is good. South Asian in raising an important question in our mind. So for a long time, people did not touch upon this topic, whether Sufis were active across Southeast Asia, mainly Qalandars. Where Qalandars active across Southeast Asia? So this one will answer categorically. Let's go for the next one. The next manuscript is OR8399, the Leiden University Library, Mandailing of North Sumatra. We have different names for Mandailing across North Sumatra, but I think that one is from that there, from the late 17th, 19th century. I think some early inventories also mentioned that it should come from that site that you can see here, Mandailing. As a collection of Islamic theories, so different risalat, you know, different risalat about different topics you can find throughout this manuscript. So the main feature is the writing skill of the author or scribe in switching from Arabic to Persian and back again to Arabic. So actually this is a manuscript with three languages, Arabic, Persian, and interlinear Malay. So look at that. This is the thing that I want to talk about. Let's read here. هذا ما جرى على لساني في علم الحقائق من الكلمات التي فيها كثيرة. وأما في كتاب المحققين من عقائد الصوفية هن صوفيان بأقاعده علماء الظواهر هیچ مخالفت نیست مگر در ربط حق به عالم علماء الظواهر ربط ایجاد حق به عالم میدهند. And you can see the translation. And interestingly, you can see interlinear translation. For example, for بَعْقَائِدِ عُلَمَاءِ زَبَاهِرِ هِيچ مُخَالِفَتْ means, you can simply read it as تِيَ دَبْرْ سَلَّهَانْ. تِيَ دَبْرْ سَلَّهَانْ literally means there is no problem, no disagreement, not a problem at all, something like that. And which quite makes sense. And مَغَرْ however, except for, which is مَلَائِنْ كَانْ, translated as مَلَائِنْ كَانْ, that you can see here, which quite makes sense. tell us that, and next page is again in Arabic. So tell us that, okay, he was quite familiar with different languages, and all of them are with the same hand. At the end of the manuscript, this is clarified as well. The next manuscript, Persian, I mean, was used as Malay used Persian as an instrument to learn Arabic too. It is quite interesting. So manuscript 1660, Leiden University, found in Batavia, Central Indonesia. This is a dated manuscript and quite important. 1919, October 1581, which is about Arabic grammar. So the features, who was copied on Javanese paper. So some people like Bauzani, he worked on this manuscript in 1969. And he thought that probably came from India, which is not correct because he did not realize or did not work on it, was not familiar with the quality of the paper, which is actually the Luang or the Luang, which is a local bark tree from central Indonesia, and tell us that so the manuscript should have come from there. And it was in the position of the Dutch scholar or scientist or colonial officer who also translated many important works. And the second and the third thing is that the identity of this manuscript remained unknown. So I started to compare this manuscript with different copies of works about Arabic grammar in different languages. And then when I was in New Zealand, I realized, okay, this manuscript is actually a direct translation of Marah al-Arwah by Ahmad ibn Ali ibn Mas'ud from 13th or 14th century AD, which was quite popular at that time, translated into many languages, and many people wanted to learn about it, mainly Turkish. But in 17th century, 18th century, it was translated into Persian, and its Persian version was printed frequently in India. No wonder, right? Not a surprise. In India in the late 19th century. And therefore, what we can say is that this is the first known Persian translation of Marah al-Arwah, and the first known Malay translation of Marah al-Arwah. And throughout, you can find Malay's Persian app too. So let's have a look at a number of, just a moment. Yeah. Okay. So, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So let's start from where? Amma ba'du bidanka in risalis. Again, you can see risala seen with three dots below, right? Risalis dar ilme saf musamma bi khulasa ilm sot. So in Malay, you can see adapun kemudian dari itu ketahui olehmu bahwa risalah ini pada menyatakan ilmu saraf. Dinamai ia khulasa ilmu saraf. So which is the translation quite good, makes a lot of sense. And important is that it was copied on Javanese paper, means that it was a very local. Okay, the second one. Oh yeah, the second one, you can see, for example, the translation is quite fascinating. Let's say with here, Mu'inul Islam wal Muslimin. This work was dedicated clearly to a king or ruler of the region. We don't know the name, it is not mentioned here, but it says Mu'inul Islam wal Muslimin. Yang menolong agama Islam dan segala orang Islam. Yeah? Muhyi al-Sawr al-Firdun. Then from Arabic, Mu'inul Islam wal Muslimin changed to Persian, Muhyi al-Sawr al-Firdun. We know that Afridun in Persian is a name as a Freydun, yeah, the ruler, a king, a prince. So, and the translation, Yang Menghdubkan Asar al-Firdun, Athar al-Firdun, and who's Afridun? He answers, Ya'ni Nam Seorang Raja, which is is the name of a king. So he clearly knows this story. Or let's go how he analyzed Arabic language, so Arabic grammar. So here says, Ya'ni agar fa dar avali kalamas, va agar fa dar dovumi kalamas. Artin ya jika fa pada pertama kalama itu, dan jika pada fa pada kedua kalama, bermula atas qiyas inilah dan huruf yang blok. So this is clearly tell you about this case, the place of fa, fa'ala taf'al. So the place of fa in al-musaf. So where fa is located, in the beginning or the end of the, I mean, or the middle of the term or verse or word. Okay, another one is my favorite manuscript, is Persian Malay Anthology of Poems. So quite important. And this is one of the oldest known Islamic manuscripts from Malay Indonesian world. So its code is 50756 of the Leiden University Library, found in Aceh Lampisang, but we are not sure whether exactly it's from Aceh or not, because it was again copied on the Luang, the local paper. And when I published an article in 2020 about this manuscript, I received a very kind email from Dr. Annabel Gallo. She advised me to send this manuscript to be carbon dated. And I sent it, as you can see, the result was 70% tell us about that it was from 1450 until 1521, and 24% is a lower chance, is 1586 until 1623. And the theme of the work is poetry. So the interesting aspect of these manuscripts. So it's a bit slow. Okay, specific features. You can find throughout this manuscript ancient forms of Malay terms, nasalization, Persian Malay translation of Quranic Arabic, which is quite fascinating what you can see. So this here, you can find three different, this is a one of the first verse-based translations and commentary on the Quran in the Malay Indonesian world. What you can see, وَتَرَى الْجِبَالُ تَحْسِبُهَا جَامِدَةً وَهِيَ تَمُرُّ مَرُّ السَّحَابِ. So kauli hatsegala bukit pada bicaramu kausangka diam ia itu, and then berlakia and seperti, and the rest of the verse. And then خود چگونه ساکن توانت بود همیز هر ذره از ذرات کائنات متحرک به حرکت اوست. Yeah. So بدپه اکن دپت دیم ادنیا سگل ذره داری پده ذره موجودت. And then we have the rest. And then we have چه هر ذره را کلمه ای و هر کلمه را اسمی و هر اسمی را زبانی. And then for example, very nice translation. دن سگل نمائی تو ادا اکن دیا لیده. Very nice, accurately translated. And this is what you can see. This is the verse of the Quran. Then we have the comment, the translation and commentary of Fakhruddin Arabi. And this is actually belong to Fakhruddin Arabi. Very curious translation of Persian phrases you can find throughout this one. This is the famous poem of Sa'di of Shiraz, Gale khushbuy dar hammam ruzi rasid az dast mahbubi be dastam. Yeah. Tana harum dalam hammam pada satu hari sampai ia, and what you can see, very nicely translated into Bahasa Melayu. Yeah, and for example, the combination of tomushki ya bedu goftam tomushki ya abiri berkata aku padania engkau kasturi atau ambarka. So kasturi atau ambarka is very much is exactly Persian combination. And in many Malay, old Malay manuscripts, mainly Hikaya, you can find a combination of Kasturi atau Anbarka, Mushku Anbar. So it tells you about the origin of the manuscript. And this is a very good idea to learn about the origin of some of its unknown manuscript in the Malay Indonesian world. And rare words and absolute words you can find throughout this. I mean, the words or terms which are not used anymore, you can find in throughout this manuscript or Malayist version as well. You can see here the term akse parto ehsane us. Here you can see akse parto ehsane us bayang panchara. The way parto has been changed to fe with three dots above, fa with three dots above, and then parto, which is quite tell us about the importance of the way they started to Malayize Persian. And then you can see the Bayt of Maghribi, Shirin Maghribi, which is quite interesting. And this is my favorite too. Jannat arbaab dil rukhsar janan didan ast. Dar chunin jannat ke goftin, you can see it's very difficult, right? They had their own style of writing. Dar chunin jannat ke goftin zanjabil hur nist. Okay. And here you can see, for example, kutaha or kutahu, or the kutaha, which is the term which it means to kujast. Where is it? Huh? Man bande asiam lutfu atawi to kujast. There are some idea who was the main, I mean, poet, the poet. Some say Khayyam or say Abu Sayyid Abu al-Khayr, but anyway, man bande asiyam lutfu ataye tu kojast, tariq dilam, nur o safaye tu kojast. And when they wanted to say, where is it? So he raised the question of, I mean, Kataha, and then they know that this term is not practiced after 17th century anymore. Maybe a few words at the turn of the 17th century refer to Kataha, but actually this is a Sanskrit term telling us about the ancient aspects of Malay orthography. And then the author himself, or maybe someone else, describe it in the margin. You can see Yani Managarang. Yeah? So it tells you about that, it means where is it? Okay, further manuscript, and the last slide is about further manuscript, which is this one is Hikayat Amir Hamza, Qissay Amir Hamza, coded 7360 of the Leiden University Library. Very interesting, again, is a combination of three languages at the same time. You can see first, Wabin Istain, Wassalatu Wassalamu ala Rasul Muhammad, right? And some spelling are not right. Katahui. Ullihmu inila qissa young mashhur itana arab dan ajam is not really readable, maybe sagala itu amirul mu'minin hamza radiyallahu an wa abu talib, now is Persian, but abu talib cast on farzine hazrat risalat fe peygamber. Again, the style of peygamber changed, fe pe is written with fe, yeah, or fa peygamber. Peygamber akhir az-zaman Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And you can see the trend, they situated along with each other and asked on farzin. Farzin means wazir or vizier, right? So this is very interesting. This is the manuscript of Hikayat Amir Hamza, or they say Amir Hamza, one of the oldest Malay Islamic stories, which was recited by Malay warriors before they go into war with, Portuguese or foreigners. So this is what I wanted to share with you. Okay, conclusion. So what you can see, my idea is that Persian was used for or in or for the sake of political debates, as Professor Andrew Peacock has already shown you. This article about exchange between different rulers, religious gatherings, what you can see about Sama session. We have mystical theological works. They talk about the essence or nature of Sufism, Arabic instructions, Arabic grammar, about in poetic literature and Islamic stories. So this is what you can see. I think that they had more close connect, relationship with each other, and it deserved to be examined seriously in the future. So far, I have found more than 30 manuscripts, including Persian terms, Persian phrases, or like such, most of them were produced before the 18th century. And thank you very much. And this is the article that I published about the Persian aspect of the Indonesian world. Thank you.
Right, thank you very, very much, Majid. That was fascinating. I'm gonna take the chair's privilege, as it were, and ask a couple of questions, if I might. You're taking off from your last statement that many of the ones with which you've come into contact were pre-18th century or by the 18th century. So especially in later 17th century and later 17th century Safavid Iran, an awful lot of religious literature, some of it quite basic on essential aspects of Shi'i doctrine and practice, were being either composed in or translated into Persian. And I didn't necessarily get from you that there were an awful lot of those, that kind of text that was finding its way that far east, for example. And in the process, I noticed that the text that you had on Sama'a was fascinating, because one of the big polemics in Safavid Iran was anti-Sama'a as a vehicle for the anti-Sufi literature. And some of that anti-Sufi literature was again appearing in Arabic, but some of it was also appearing in Persian as the century goes on. So I guess my question is, have you seen any of that kind of material that far east? The specifically the translations of basic sort of Shi'i faith doctrine and practice primer texts, and also any of the anti-Sufi material that was being composed again and also in Persian?
Thank you very much for this very good question. Actually, after, this is very interesting, because after Safavid, Iranian, delegations moved to Southeast Asia. So what we know that after Safavid period, they started to settle in Thailand, in Siam. So they started to promote Shiism as well. But recently I found, this is very interesting, I found a Persian manuscript. I have an, will be published very soon. I found a Persian manuscript, during the early period of Safavid Empire, and Iranian delegations moved across Southeast Asia, and they did not stop in Thailand, but they moved down and they went to Sumatra, and they had started to promote Shiism, and they used different languages. You know, they, for example, promoted some Shi'i literatures, mainly those of Allama Majlisi, Sheikh Baha'i. So they use them, or Kashkul. The Kashkul was, they copied Kashkul there, and then they were read by local people, and some she's, the people married with local, women, and they started to create a new territory for Iranians or Shi'is coming from South Safavid Persia. And for sure, I think they had their own, their own networks. They promoted their idea, and you know, we have more and more data these days, and I think everything gonna change very soon. Yeah, did I answer your question?
Yeah, that's fascinating. I imagine the material is going to turn up.
Yes, yes. I was surprised when I noticed that Kashkul Sheikh Baha'i is found in the Malay Indonesian world, and people used to read it, and the people from southern Sumatra, we're in contact with them. We know that they contacted with Iranians in Thailand, but we didn't know that Iranians moved to southern Sumatra, and they had to know communication with local people. And Sheikh Baha'i, Allama Majlisi, and I have a corresponding article about fiqh, that Shi'i fiqh was read in across Southeast Asia, mainly those of Kulaini. Oh, so we're read in Southeast Asia. It's quite interesting.
Wow. That's terrific. Okay, some questions have come in. Hi, thank you, Majid, for an interesting talk. I would like to know if we can trace Persian art in Malay culture, specifically architecture.
Yeah. I think the main expert of this area is Dr. Annabel Gallup. She knows many things about the Persian arts in that region. Yeah, absolutely, there are many. Yeah, in terms of calligraphy, in terms of mainly seals, the seals used by kings and rulers, yes, you can find a lot. And textiles or fabric, and you can find all of them in, yes, there's clearly a lot of evidence we have about the relationship.
What was the name of the scholar you mentioned?
Dr. Annabel Gallup, the leading figure in the area of, Malay Indonesian Islamic studies or Malay Indonesian manuscripts. Yeah, she's the head of Southeast Asian Studies Department in the British Library.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, another question. Would not Persian origin personal names, some place names and borrowed vocabulary, add to the body of evidence? And then there's a further thing from the same person. As a side note, I've always found, it's moving around, that the Thai term for foreigner, farang, is interesting.
Oh, yeah. They used to use that. Yeah, quite popular, the farang. They got it from Persian, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. But do you see any place names or other kinds of names?
Oh, yeah, this is interesting. Yeah. Richard Winstead, he believed that the western side of Malaysia, as well as Kelantan, there might be relationship between western side of Iran, the name, and he said that some towns, western coast of Malaysia, the names are taken from western side of Iran, mainly Khuzestan. And he has a special article about this issue. And
what was what was the name?
Richard Winstead.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a colonial.
Oh, you mentioned him, yes.
Richard Winstead, and he said that the name of Khuzestan. And there are a couple of more. Yes, I think there are, I think we have a few names from Malay Indonesian world in Iran. So I'm not sure about them yet, but I found some evidence telling me or suggesting me that these names were taken from Malay Indonesian prototypes or cities. So, yeah.
Cool. Another question. Thank you for your wonderful talk, Dr. Majid. I just wondered, could it be possible the contact between Indonesia and Persian started as early as 1370, such as some stories and such. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. See, the Bandar-e-Sayraf or Siraf or Embusher and Kharg Island, and even the Arabic sources, I mean, historical documents tell us about the relationship between Indonesians and the Iranians from the beginning during the Sassanid period. So Dr. Sotoudeh-Nejad, I mentioned in my article, Dr. Sotoudeh-Nejad, he examined archaeological relationship between Iran and Indonesia. He found many things from these two communities, but he mainly from the Buddhist land of Thailand, but he also referred to the relationship between these two communities at the turn of the 7th, 8th centuries. Before Islam, they had relationship, plenty of Arabic documents or references that we have that tell us about the existence of Malay Indonesians in the Persian Gulf. Also, As-Samarqandi in his historical report, he clearly mentioned that the people from Malacca, from Sumatra and Java, they were residents of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf. Clearly mentioned this issue. It means that people were there, and absolutely they had relationships since long time ago before the 14th century. And the article of Dr. Marison, in 1959, he clearly described the relationship between Persian and Malays since long time ago at the turn of the 7th, 8th century, up to 14th, 15th century, after Timurid and then Sultanate Delhi, and then up until the Safavid period. He clearly mentioned 1959. He gave us good examples, yeah.
Okay, terrific, that's terrific. Another question and comment. Thank you so very much for this fascinating talk. My question is about Malay renderings of stories. And since you spoke briefly of Amir Hamza, I would like to know if you have come across any Malay translation of the Tutinome among the manuscripts you consulted. Now there's a second question.
Yeah, one of the most important manuscripts in Malay, obviously translated from Persian, is Tutinome, Bayan Budiman. They call it Hikaya Bayan Budiman. So it is absolutely and you can find plenty of them are found across Malaysia and Indonesia, and Perpustakaan Negara Malaysia. I mean, the National Library of Malaysia, there are good copies of that one. I think they are available online, or Divan Bahasa dan Pustaka in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur. In Indonesia, you can find a good number of these manuscripts too. In the British Library and Leiden University, there are good copies of Tutinome, which are Bayan Budiman, which are translated based on the Datuk Naqshbandi. But the question is whether they are actually faithful translations or they were mixed with other materials. But what we can see, the reference of Naqshbandi can be found in some of them. Yeah, in some of them you can find the name of Naqshbandi. But the point is that we have a lot of such things in across Malay Indonesia. And the people like Bergensky, this book.
Please.
yeah, this one. Vladimir Bergensky, his book, thoroughly talk about the Tutinome and its relationship with Iranian or Persian literature. And he mentioned the name of Qazi Hassan. Who's Qazi Hassan? We don't know, but there are many. I was collecting some material to see or to find out who is this Qazi Hassan who copied the manuscript of, Tutinome, yeah.
Now there's a follow-up to the same question from the same person. I have another question specifically about manuscript Malay 338 of Leiden collections entitled Hekaya Khwaje Maimun.
Uh-huh.
Have you studied this particular narrative? Could you provide us any information about it? Is it a version of the Tutinome?
Uh-huh. This is, again, you can find very good good analysis of this manuscript. This story of Khwaje Maimun is found in two works. One of them is that of the Bergensky. I think it's very nice. I will write the name of this here, the name of the book. Vladimir Bergensky, or you can see the slide after that. And the other is the work of Richard Winstead, Yes, here, Richard Vincent. He, mm-hmm. Both of them clearly analyzed the Khwaja Maimunan's relationship with Dutinama. Look, all of them are vague. We don't have a concrete answer for these questions. We don't know, but probably you can find references to them. Some of them refer to that one, Khwaja Maimun and Tutiname by Jan Budiman, but some of them remain on, because, you know, different variations we have, different types, different formats we have. It's some of them short, some of them long. Therefore, we don't have firm answer for such questions. But if you want to know more about them, these two books are really good.
Okay. There's a comment here. Edward Schaefer in The Golden Peaches of Samarkand mentions Malay crews on Persian argosies and Persian crews on Malay argosies in the China trade. Yeah, that may well go back to the, I have to read it in the sun here, to the early Sasanian days of Siraf, as David Whitehouse's excavation suggests. Is any work being done on this?
Oh, good question. So I've been working on it. I've been working on it, not yet published, but yeah, the Siraf were in Bushehr, Khargailand, Malay were really active in that region. And then Iranians, China Sea, and even throughout the Indian Ocean, they were quite active at that time. And I recently came across an inscription in China on which has been mentioned that Iranians, along with a few Dato, and we know that Dato is a title for Malays, with a few Datos visited China together at the same time for 700 years ago. So it means that they were really close with each other. They understood each other with their own language, I think was Persian. And it is important to know that for a long time, we have some travel reports during Safavid period. We have that people in Isfahan were able to speak Malay. Mm-hmm. We have. So they were able to speak Malay, people across, and Malay was known as the Latin of the East. So we have clearly mentioned Malay was a Latino of the East. So it means that Malay Indonesian were quite powerful. This is what scholar really touched upon. They're quite important. Their language was as important as Persian. And this is why I was searching a lot in libraries in order to find Malay Indonesian manuscripts in Iran that I found. And I believe that there are more. If you go, for example, I think if you go to, mainly in Isfahan, or some central Iranian libraries, you can find good number of manuscripts which are probably written by or copied by Malay Indonesians or were given to Iranians in Mecca. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was primarily sea trade. It wasn't overland.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Okay. I wanted to ask one other question. You mentioned the Hekayat literature. I'm a little bit familiar with the Hekayat literature in Malaysian context. And I wonder, some of these are Shi'i type,
sure.
Something. What's the connection between the Indonesian and the Malaysian? That I'm completely ignorant. Or is there none in particular?
You mean that the Shi'i Hikayat or Shi'i in the Malay Indonesian world?
Yeah, that's right. Is there any movement that down further?
This is a very good question. And there was a bit, since 1888, people had idea about the nature of Shi'i Hikayat in the Malay Indonesian world. We have some, for example, Hikayat Muhammad Hanafiya, for a long time, people assumed that this was a Shi'i Hikayat or written by Shi'i people. I published an article about it. I found the origin of this Hikayat, and I have a book about it very soon. And this Hikayat was originally written by Sufis of between Bukhara and northern India. But it's full of references to Hassan and Hussein and their martyrdom in Karbala. And he called both of them as Shaheed. Hassan Shaheed, Muhammad Hussein Shaheed. And also called Muhammad the Prophet as Shaheed, a martyr. And we have also some Hikayat instructions, how Prophet instructed his daughter to treat her husband, Ali, which is said it was Persian, was Shi'i sources. But one of the most important works, which I think was quite Shi'i, very Shi'i, which was the one that I published with Dear Islam Journal. I call it Shaving the Prophet, and the Hikayat is Hikayat Nabi Burchukur, means shaving the Prophet. So this is a story for long, and at the margin of this one of these manuscripts kept in the Leiden University Library mentioned that do not believe in this Hikayat because it was copied by a Rafidi. And we know that Rafizi is ascribed to Persians or Shi'is, right? So I started to search and find out, and after I think a couple of years, I realized that this manuscript is exactly is a direct translation of Futuhat-Nameh-ye Sartaroshan or Futuhat-Nameh-ye Salmanian, the people who were, barbers, the Book of Barbers, which was quite popular after the Safavid period, right? So, and not a surprise that they call it a work by Rafizi. We have more, and then we have Hikayat Tabut. And I think an Indonesian professor, Fatima Sidqi, if I pronounce the name and if I recall correctly, Fatima Sidqi in 1960 or 1970s published an article in Indonesian and then published in French with Archival, Journal of Archival, about Shi'i stories in Malaysia. And also Dr. Michael Feener and Formicky, they published a book about Shi'ism in Southeast Asia, in which you can find references to this one. And Dr. Edwin Wieringa of the Kuhl University in Germany, he published a lot of things about the role of Ali and Fatima in the Malay Indonesian literature, and he detects or identify Shi'i spots throughout the Malay literature.
Very interesting. A comment here. Hi, Dr. Majid. I just wondered about Hekayat Bakhtiar. Is it still available in Persian? Is there a version of it in English?
Mm-hmm. So the question is about the English version and its Persian version.
Is it still available in Persian? One, and two, is it also available in English?
I think there is, yes. I think most of the a large number of materials in Bahasa Melayu, if they are taken from the Middle East or Central Asia, you can find your prototype in Iranian libraries. Mm-hmm. And for Bakhtiar, I recall something, but I'm not sure. But I think there you can find it in Iran. But the English of Bakhtiar, I think some part of it were translated before, not the whole part of it. And the works, if you want to know about Persian literature, and Persian literature and Malay Hikayat, one of the best works, I think, apart from Brakel, who wrote about Hikayat Muhammad Hanafiya, and Berginsky and Richard Winsett that I said, the works of Bauzani, Alessandro Bauzani, the famous Iranologist and Persianist of Italian, right? Quite fascinating. He did a great job. He touched upon every single issues related to Persian Malay. At the end of, during the last decade of his life, he began studying Malay, and he was quite good. And he went here, before the revolution, he went to Iran and delivered a very important lecture at the University of Tehran about Persian literature in the Malay Indonesian world.
It sounds to me as if, again, I interject myself, that a question would be, was it trade, commerce, mercantile activity that preceded any sorts of distinctly religious propaganda propagation into this region, whereas the conventional wisdom for the subcontinent, for Hindustan, is that it was Sufis came first and predated the commercial interaction. What's your take on that? Was it commerce and trade that preceded contacts, or was it sort of propagation of Islam?
For a long time, I think people assume that. For a long time, people assume that was promoters of Islam were main people, the people who brought Islam to Malay Indonesian world. But later on, further evidence suggests that they were traders and merchants, or even they were some, for the sake of power rather than religion, people moved to Southeast Asia for the sake of power and developing their territories. And one of the good thing work is the work of Dr. Kowan of the 1940, who discovered a Persian inscription in North Sumatra. And when he wanted to talk about this issue, at the end of the manuscript, he referred to the name of Iranians, the court of Aceh, I think, or New Sumatra. Yeah. He talked about Iranian active there. Most of them are, or military figures, Sepah Salar, and the name of the people. I think Yeah, absolutely. For a long time, people assumed that it was for the sake of religion, missionary activities. But after that, further evidence, and I'm sure that more evidence we can find that tell us it was all or most of them were because of trading as well as military aspects. And Dr. Burgunski has a lot of articles. One of them is about the Malay Indonesians hire people from Khorasan in their army, and greater Khorasan, let's say Central Asia of today, or Khawaraz, mainly Khawaraz. So they were active in the court of, Aceh, and they helped their sultan, you know? And it's the same, because at the turn, during the emergence of Islam, so Sassanids, so they hired the Malays, because they trusted them as good sailors, yeah? So they gave them the sea, the oceans, the Persian Gulf. So, the history repeated again, and they, Malay Indonesians hired Iranians or Persians from Khorasan in the court. And we have a lot of evidence. Good rivet evidence from Armenian archives we have too. So Dr. Burgunski's works are highly recommended, along with the names that I listed at the second or third slide. The name of people are really important. All of them did a great job.
Could you show us that that's the book you were pointing to? Can you pull that out of the shelf give us a shot here?
So there are many good books. So these are the things that I have in the library, in my library. So this is, okay. So here is what you can see. The Heritage of Traditional Malay Literature, Vladimir Burgunski, yeah?
Great.
We have Malay Court, Religion, Culture, and Language of Peter Riddle, which is about commentaries of the Quran, and talk about the wujudiyyat, wahdatul wujud, and also the role of, wahdatul wujud taken from Persian literature, Persian sources. And we have also, we have the works of the History of Classical Malay Literature by Richard Winstead, published by Oxford University Press. We have works of many works, I said, Viringa, Dr. Annabel Gallo. All of them did a great job. So Ambauzani, all of them good. It's the third slide of my work, Dr. Andrew Peacock did a great job, and he analyzed a good number of letters and documents telling us about the relationship between people in Persian Gulf and there in Aceh or in Malacca. Fascinating. And if you want to know about the Iranians active in Buddhist land, or Buddhist part of Southeast Asia, you can go through the works of Dr. Arash Khazani, he did a great job, published recently a book about this issue. Yeah.
That's absolutely terrific. That's absolutely fascinating. Very, very, very cool. May I thank Majid once again. Thank you so very much. This has just been very eye-opening to see how Persian culture has sort of made its way over the millennia, it seems to me, much further east. So this is absolutely terrific. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your kind invitation. Thank you, everyone.